I grew up in East London, Stratford, where you probably know where the Olympics happened. People think, oh, as a little kid, what are you doing working in a shop? Well, it was the only way I could see my dad. By 16, I was a fully fledged shopkeeper.
But your story is one of graft and struggle.
So I went to McDonald's and I went to the lady, do you have any jobs? She goes, no. And I went, ah. Oh.
I think it was, who was the guy?
Carl Pilkington.
Carl Pilkington.
Idiot Abroad.
He said to you, so how'd you make your money then, mate? And you went,
how did I make my money? Well, basically, I worked in my dad's corner shop, so I started learning VATs and markups from a very young age.
People think being a millionaire is the most beautiful thing. It's a status like celebrity. It's not that great. You're the most hated person out there. Got my nose broken, been stabbed. You know, when you try to get out of that lifestyle and give your kids something better, people will still judge you no matter where you are. 1100 per year.
That doesn't sound very expensive at all.
But when you're on £3-4 an hour on McDonald's, most recent purchase is a pub with three flats on top.
What's the cash flow on that?
I think it's about a cash flow of around about 35.
35 grand a month.
And guess what? You can also buy a property with crypto out there. So those of you thinking, what I'm going to do after this Bitcoin bull run, take it to Dubai, baby.
The stock market is the most passive investment there is.
So this is what I do. Look.
So I first came across you on a TikTok video where you were basically, I think it was, who was the guy?
Carl Pilkington.
Carl Pilkington.
Idiot Abroad.
He said to you, so how'd you make your money then, mate? And you went, I'm glad you asked. And you gave a bang, 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 like snapshot of your story. And it went viral, got millions of views. And that was the first time I came across you. And I was like, who's this guy, man? I've not seen him before. So I hit you up and we've been talking for the last couple of years. I've met you. You've been around my house before. But mate, incredible story. So I wanted to really kind of pick your brain because you've built up your property business the traditional way. You've worked hard. You've grafted. Working at McDonald's, putting every penny into your property business. Yeah. Property business as it went up. Refinanced, built, and now I don't know what you're
it's around about the 10 million.
Is that your, that's your portfolio?
My portfolio.
And how leveraged are you?
I think probably roughly about 40%.
So you got about 6 million profit, 6 million equity.
Yep.
That's huge, mate.
Yeah,
that's huge.
With a very good reoccurring, you know, monthly income.
What's the cash flow on that?
I think it's about a cash flow of around about 35.
35 grand a month.
Yeah.
Profit, or is that turnover? Is that rental?
Turnover, probably about 12 grand in loans.
Yeah.
Roughly around about that. So 23, 24 right. grand. As you know, you've got to be tax efficient. And, you know, there's certain things that come through personal partnerships, some through your companies, some through management companies, the way you structure yourself. Where are all some of your bills coming? Is it all coming out personally? Is there certain things that come at your business? Is a business expense?
Yeah.
So you've just got to be very clever. And that's a lot of the people don't look at that sort of side of things. They want to grow. And then they get hit with so many problems. It's like, hey, I'm supposed to be earning this much. The tax man wants a big chunk of it. I barely got enough for my children's private school fees and, you know, some of, you know, like driving a nice car on a holiday. So you've got to be very clever, and that's something I learned.
And a lot of landlords have been really hit with tax changes and also mortgage interest rates going up. So your properties, are they mostly residential, commercial, HMOs? What's the kind of breakdown?
Started with single buy-to-lets. That started to get broken back in 2013, 2014 for me. So then I went straight into HMOs. I bought actually my first HMO as an accident in 2012. So I was doing that all the way to 2017. Then I realized Article 4s started coming in. So some of these bigger properties. So I did become a builder on the way as well. So while I extended these properties on the bottom, upways, sideways, I realized there was more rooms, which I could rent for more. So I could pull up more money as well.
Yeah.
But then that started shutting down. So I was like, you know, people are talking about the buzzword social housings, you know, give stuff to the council, etc. I started looking at that back about 5-6 years ago. I'm thinking, look, how do I hedge all of these, you know, government restrictions, and how do I be part of the community? So I started working with children's homes and started going, you need this. Can you get the planning? They would get the new planning. I said, here's the keys. 5-year lease. given them on a 5-year lease and got a premium sort of reward as well for that, and say, look, you treat this building like it's your own.
Yeah.
You look after all of the expenses in terms of maintaining it as well, because you're providing care for your people. So I came out of that, and my most recent purchase is a pub with 3 flats on top, which nice. Obviously that extra 5% stamp duty that you got to pay, you don't pay that on a semi-commercial,
yeah.
You know, because it falls under, you know, sort of business.
Mixed use now. Yeah. Even if you've got like a apartment block, if there's just one commercial unit and then there's 100 residentials, you're still going to pay commercial stamp duty rates on that. So yeah. that's a huge win. So talk to me then. I want to get like started from the beginning.
Yeah.
So growing up, what was life like for you growing up?
Sure. So I grew up in East London, Stratford, where you probably know where the Olympics happened, 2012 yeah. Olympics, where Crossrails is going through. You got Stratford International, where you go straight into France now. But when I was growing up, there was rats running around, and it was a really rough area, not much CCTV. You'd probably get mugged walking down the road, you know. But I was very fortunate where I lived in a small sort of community. On my street, it was us. My middle uncle lived opposite. My grandparents used to live about 10 doors down. And then my other uncle, who had 7 children, bought 2 3-bedroom houses next to each other. And he used to live here. So basically, you could never like bring a girl around or anything, because it was like CCTV everywhere. Everyone's watching you. And then the next street after was a real community hub. We had a corner shop, Shine's Off License. And that's where my sort of journey began. And people think, oh, as a little kid, what are you doing working in a shop? Well, it was the only way I could see my dad. You know, dad used to work 7 days a week, used to open the shop up 8, 9 o'clock in the morning when we went to school. And he used to come home at 10:30. So my mum goes, you want to go and see your dad? Here's his sandals. It's a bit hot in the shop. Take it for him. Take some dinner for him. And that's where I used to walk around. And then while I was saying, dad, here's your dinner, he'll be like, can you just stock them shelves up for me?
Yeah.
Take the old ones out first. It got out of date. So my training started at eight years old, 9 years old, 10 years old. I mean, I don't know what school was teaching me at that time, but I definitely knew my dad was teaching me about VATs and markups. Mm-hmm. So for those who don't know, is VAT is the little bit that you give to the government. You know, how many times do we spend money thinking this is all mine, and then you get a tax bill through the post? I learned this at a very young, tender age. And markups, it's that little bit that pays for heating, lighting, staffing costs. My dad would always say 20% for the government and 35% for us on top of it. And then to add all these figures up on the invoice. And I was like, I'm just 10, dad. What do I need to know about this for? And he's like, well, I don't want a mistake. Otherwise, we need to change all the prices. And I remember so many times taking the labels off and then taking the machine gun and, you know, doing all that. So that's where my education started. And to be honest, to fast forward that little bit, by 16, I was a fully fledged shopkeeper. My dad would go on holiday during summer holidays. It was just me and the white guy, John, who would be standing at the shop. And it was only because he was the legal age. If we had to sell any alcohol or anything, he would come behind. And
but you were
just
running
do
the
that.
Show, basically.
Pay point, lottery machine, Oyster card, the cash machine. You'd have to lock the door, take the cassettes out, put the money in so we didn't have to bank it. I was learning business, like, you know, how many Stella cans do we need? How many Skull Supers? That was my sort of lifestyle. But while I was working at the shop, at the age of 13, my dad decided that I needed a proper job. So he introduced me to Sanjay Wadhwani, who owned a big cash and carry. And that's where we went shopping, so in bulk for. So I went there on the weekend and, you know, basically my job is I had a computer in front of me with a little scanner, and it was no seats. People used to come with their trolleys. It used to be like concrete floors, a bit like Costco, tin can at the top. And I used to lift up a case, scan it, and put it onto another trolley. And I used to print out the bill, and there you go. That was actually my first job. It was a 5 o'clock morning start, exactly where the Olympics are now, Hackney Marshes. That's exactly where I started from. And very quickly, after a couple of weeks, at first week, how many times do you join a job and you think, this is wicked, I'm meeting people, I'm learning, and then it's like, hey, I'm just breaking my back here. So I was like, there's got to be a smarter way than pick these 45 kg kilo rice or these Callaloo and Aki Soulfish heavy tins. So then I noticed there was an 8-digit barcode. So I punched in this 8-digit barcode, and lo and behold, the product came up. So what did I become really good at? Remembering numbers, 8-digit numbers. And there was thousands of products in these big, massive aisles. I was like, I'm not lifting none of that. Maybe these small little items at the top, I might scan them and put them in the basket at the front. But these big items. So it taught me a lot about life, in terms of so many times in your life, you're faced with so many problems. Mm. Yeah, but what do we do? sometimes it's good just to take a step back, take a deep breath, and everything seems a lot more clearer. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, whenever you face challenges, think about them for a little while.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and we can overcome them. Another thing I learned was diversification of income, multiple streams of income here. Because once this lady come up to me, she was, at this time I'm 13, 14, and I'm doing press-ups in my room. I want to come hench, you know, I want to be a big man. So I saw this old lady early in the morning. She come from an Afro-Caribbean restaurant because that's what we sold. And she was by herself. She looked quite frail. And I don't know if you know these metal trolleys, but if they catch the back of your ankle, you're going down, man. It's like you're out. And there's this little ramp that goes outside. So I went, excuse me, would you like a hand? Because it just felt like the right thing to do. She goes, yes, please. So I took it out. She goes, could you load the car as well? And all right, cool. I've done this many of times for my dad. You know, we unload the shopping. The heavy stuff goes at the bottom, light stuff, you chuck it on top. You know, we do it the reverse way. And as I've done this and I closed the door, she goes, here you go. And she gave me £5. And I went, no, I can't take this. This is cool. I've just come to help you. And she goes, no, it's for your tea money. Because this is 6 o'clock in the morning now. So I come back and Paul Ferring, my manager, I went and saw him the other day. That's how much good relationships we still keep. But I went to Paul, I went, Paul, she's given £5. Because I was told never steal at the till. You know, you don't take what's not yours. So I gave him the £5. He goes, no, Sean, that's yours. And I was like, what do you mean? He goes, yeah, you get to keep that. You're supposed to do this. You're supposed to help customers. So they come back and you're allowed to do that. So I was like, I'm on £3 an hour, 10 hours, I get 30 quid. I help 8 customers out there, £5. I get 40 quid. That's more than what I'm getting paid for. So I started learning that when I went home, I don't know if you remember this, Sam, if you're a bit younger, but you used to get this brown envelope with a little pay slip with the notes in there and a little bit of coins. Yeah, and that's what I used to get. And the little coins, I'd take it because there'd always be something that was dented or broken that they would give you at a quarter of the price to take home, like these little fizzy pops or crisps or something like that. I would just be like, I bought it for my brothers and sisters, you know. The packet would go to my mum. There you go, mum. That, because that's what we were told, give everything to mum. You live in our house, you eat our food, you're lucky. And then, you know, this money that I was getting from outside, I was like, oh, I'm not declaring that. That's me. That's cash for me. Like, that's not part of my paycheck. So I didn't really sort of mention it. I thought I was doing something really bad, but I'd go to like JD Sports, buy myself a nice pair of trainers, because I didn't have that. You know, my granddad came in 1970s and he told me he slept on the floor, you know, in one little small room. He goes, your dad and his two brothers would sleep on the bed. Me and your grandma would sleep on the floor. That's how we started. And then he sent my dad out to Ford's to go and spray cars. He used to do door-to-door selling, you know, clothes, etc. And he goes, 4 o'clock in the morning, I go to Ford's, spray the cars. At 2 o'clock, we'd close up the Fords. Your uncle would come in the car. I used to sit in, eat my dinner while we went to Peckham Rye Lane, Lewisham, to go and do door-to-door selling. I'd finish 12 o'clock at night, drive home, go to sleep 4 o'clock straight. And he goes, you know, these people, because I showed my hard work effort, they'd give me the keys after 2 weeks. You can open this place up now. Mm. And he, being around my granddad at the age of 17, doing door-to-door selling with him, he taught, it was priceless. My dad knew exactly what he was doing. He goes, you go with your granddad to go door-to-door selling, because he knew that the things that my granddad would download into me, you don't get that no more. Yeah. You know, he told me about hard work. And he goes, do you know, son, I've been down this street for the last 30 years. I still don't know the name. I says, well, how do you know? He goes, in life, always remember a symbol. I always remember that letterbox there, and I got to turn right on that letterbox. Uneducated person, third world country, lost everything through the partition, went Singapore, Thailand, Malaysia, come to this country and showing me how to hustle. It showed me you didn't have to be really educated. You don't have to like have the best brain in the world. You just got to learn techniques and go, I can navigate myself like this and just get better and better at it.
Yeah.
And be honest. So anyway, I didn't fancy like a paper round and all that. So I did the cash and carry. But then I don't know if it's ever come across to you that, hey, my dad got me this job. This isn't self-made. So I decided to put some applications out at 16 and I went and applied to McDonald's. So I went to McDonald's and I went to the lady, do you have any jobs? She goes, no. And I went, okay, I just got no from Next, no from River Island. It was Galleon's Reach, little retail part. So I take a step back and I went, nah, excuse me, is the manager here? So Jason Bryant came out. He was my manager for 16 years, by the way. So he came out and he goes, I said, do you have any jobs? He goes, you got a job? He goes, have you got time now? I went, yeah. Take a seat. I'll see you in the next 20 minutes. And that's it. So when you go into McDonald's, you really don't realise that what goes into a burger. You just pick it up, you bite it and go, that's nice, great. But really, you get onions, ketchup, mustard, pickles, and they're supposed to be kissing, not shagging, apparently. You know, all of them sort of things. That's what they say. The more you spend, the more you bend, the more you spend, or whatever. They say teamwork makes the dream work. You get all of that sort of talk in there. But you got to imagine, I'm a little 16-year-old. You've got men who's standing next to you. 8 regulars, 4 doubles, quarters, how long? And I'm like, what? And they've just chucked me on this dressing table and they've put buns and they go, dress them. And I was like, dress them? And they go, yeah, this one. Yeah, that one. Yeah, them pickles. Use both hands, not one hand. Use the pick. And I couldn't get it. And after 3 times, they're like, get him off. He's a waste of space, get him off. And so I'm there, blue in the face, thinking, I've just failed. Like, what the hell? Like, I'm going to get sacked on my first day. I've told my dad I've got my own job. And now I'm going to get sacked. So I went, please don't send me home. I can do anything. And they were like, put him on nuggets. And that was my job for the day. It was this offer that you had a Big Mac and you got 3 nuggets free with a Big Mac that day. So I literally opened the packet and I would just put 3 nuggets in, wrap them up, put them on a tray and just put it in the production bin. And I thought, I got through today. I did it again and I did it again. And I thought, do you know what? You've just sort of failed and you've just accepted it and you've just stayed on that nugget station. What the hell's wrong with you? So I thought, I need to go back and I need to start learning other things. So all of a sudden, I'm learning the chicken side. I'm putting the mayonnaise on the burgers, chicken sandwiches. And then I was like, can I try fries? Yes, they gave me a fry station. I started bagging up all the fries and stuff. And everything wants fries. Every meal has fries. So you run out of fries, the whole restaurant stops. So, you know, I got very good at my intuition. How many people are in the queue? How many people are on drive-through? How much? Because fries have a 5-minute shelf life. If you cook too many, you're chucking bucket loads in a red bin. So you're getting trouble for that. There's a high food cost there, etc. So I then started learning everything. I started learning the grill side. I learned how to take the burgers off properly. I was like, look, all I need is just a bit of time to learn the formula. Once I know the formula, I'll just get faster. Before long, I was making double what everybody else could make because I knew that's 35-minute time. I can lay the meat. That's going to be up in 40 seconds. I can get another set of buns ready that no one normally does. And while this is up, I'll dress it in double time, put the next burgers and put another round of meat. It's like they couldn't wrap burgers fast enough as fast as I was making it in there. I then looked at the front because I'm actually a really lazy person. I just tried to think smart. And I think the laziest people are bloody on the till. They press a few buttons and they put a few things in the bag. So I was like, can I be on tills? No, Sean, we ain't got no labour. So I was like, can I do that? I said, I got a 45-minute break. Can I eat in 15 minutes and work for the other half an hour? But you're not getting paid. That's fine with me. So 2 shifts, I work for half an hour for free. And then all of a sudden, I'm doing 8 o'clock to 4 o'clock. And as I'm about to leave at 4 o'clock, they go, oh my God, Lucy's not here. We were short on tills. Sean, can you stay on? Well, we're going to pay you now because you know the tills. All right, cool. Stayed till 8 o'clock. I did an 8 to 8, 10-hour shift. All of a sudden, this company couldn't afford to let me go. How many times do we get stuck in a job that you're thinking at the end of the month, I need to stay here because I need to pay my bills. And someone's just going to get rid of me at the drop of a hat because I'm only good at this one skill. I knew tills, fry station, chicken side, grill side, car park, dining. They couldn't afford to let me go. And that's when I knew I'm indispensable here. Mm. You know, I'm mostly flaccid. I've got many different skills, you know, and all while doing this, you know, I think people should really ask themselves, because this podcast is all about helping people, right? People should ask themselves, am I somebody who is a fixed mindset or growth mindset? And you got to ask yourself, when was the last time I tried a new cuisine? When was the last time I tried a new skill or even learned a new course? You know, people need to ask themselves these questions, Sam. Because
it sounds to me like right from the get-go, working for your dad, working at McDonald's even, a lot of people would think, oh, McDonald's is just a dead-end job. But you're thinking, how can I grow? How can I become indispensable here? So you're constantly thinking about growing, applying this to something else, next level, unlocking new levels.
Absolutely. And I did go uni. So my next step after college was university.
How old were you when you went to uni?
Uni, 18.
So you worked at McDonald's?
Yes.
And you were doing uni at the same
college
time?
College. So 4 days I would be at college And the day off during the week and the weekend, I used to do McDonald's.
Right.
Yes, just to fund myself. And then through the summer holidays, I went to the Hamburger University. Yes, there's a place in East Finchley called Hamburger University. Go and Google it. And I went and passed my manager exams and I became a manager through them 6 weeks.
So what did you study at uni? Management skills?
I did accounting and finance.
Interesting.
I got exempt from all of the three of the ACCA papers to become an accountant.
Did you want to become an accountant?
I thought it was a good thing. I thought it sounds like a good title. And during one of the summer holidays, two of the days, my dad said, you can go and work with an accountant, Mr. Ondia, you can go in there. So I remember going in, I've got a suit now. I've got a room, that back room is me with a computer. Great. So I'm sitting here now. And a big pile of papers been thrown and they go, you know, sundry accounts, ledger accounts, credit, debits. I said, yeah, we're learning about this in university. I can do this. So you go, oh, I need to go and ask Mr. Smith, what's this go under? Yeah, that goes under this because it's that invoice. So I entered it. And everything was like a mission to me. Entered it. Boom. Oh, it must be nearly lunchtime. It's only 10 past 10. Oh, this is boring. Stuck to this desk, you know? And so I was like, look, I finished my work. They go, great. Here's another pile for the other client. And I realized this is just dead end. Mm. I'm just going to keep doing the same process again and again and again, no matter how good I am. I don't want to bloody do this. So it really taught me that one summer, they gave you this lovely Christmas party. You're in a lovely hotel, lovely dinner. You get the same people who have worked in this company for the last 20 years. Same old story. Yeah, my son's at uni now. I'm doing this now. It just wasn't me. I'm just like, same old. It was nothing new. I wanted to learn. I wanted to get out there. And I was like, this ain't for me. But I knew I had to see my degree through. And at that stage, in 2004, 2005, 2006, 2007, them sort of years, uni cost about £1,000 to £1,100. So it just made sense. I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. And I knew I'd done business studies, accounts, ICT in college. Let me just get into uni and just carry on. At least let me get a degree next to my name. No one in my family's got a degree. So let me do that, make the family proud. And yeah, is uni a good thing or not? Well, it taught me team building skills. It taught me that I had to look after my own time. Whether the subject or not taught me anything, that's a different matter. But look after my own time, that my grade's going to be affected if I don't meet these four people. I'm going, when's your tax lesson? When's your maths lesson? When's this lesson? Can we meet Friday at 3 o'clock? That's what it did teach me about being self-motivated. But I was very proud that I paid for my own university. You know, I'd work in McDonald's, I'd save. That thing that's called a rainy day account. My dad said, save for a rainy day. I said, what's that? He goes, you never know when you're going to need money. I don't want you receiving money and spending all of it. Put some of it away because you never know. And I was like, I don't get this. Why? And then all of a sudden, you know, you're paying for your own uni. It was just techniques to try build that.
Was that 1100 per what? Per year?
1100 per year.
That doesn't sound very expensive at all.
But when you're on £3-4 an hour on McDonald's, and
well, yeah,
doing 50 hours.
It is, but now, isn't it like 9-10,000?
Yeah, it's 9-10,000. And today I would do things very differently because leaving university with a £30,000 debt, with joining a queue of people who've all got a degree and still sitting unemployed,
yeah,
that doesn't make sense to me.
So if you were going back, would you do it different?
No. With what I paid, I'd still do the route that I did. You know, Emmanuel Asuko, you know, he's a financial advisor, Emmanuel Asuko. He's been on ITV and stuff. He went to the same uni as me. You know, he's somebody who vouched for me when I got my job in Barclays at 21. You know, I've made some good relationships too. But if it was at 10 grand, I wouldn't pay 10 grand for going to uni.
How many jobs have you had?
So jobs, a few. In Barclays, when I joined Barclays, they had this 8-month rule. And so within Barclays, I was a cashier. So if you got a pile of cash, I'll show you how fast I can count. Cashier, I was a coordinator. I was a personal banker. You know, look after individuals with their loans, savings, short-term savings, long-term savings, GI, general insurances. They said that you have to stay in this role for 18 months and do not talk. 8 months, boom, next level. You know, and then I became one of the youngest premier managers. That was me at the age of 23, look after millionaires in that whole patch. I'm number one in Western in eight months. I was third in the region and I didn't sell. I just matched what people needed. I was just very good at doing my CDD, which is a customer discussion document. Hi, Mr. Samuel. Thank you for coming in today. Appreciate your time. Would you like a cup of tea, perhaps a glass of water? Right, today I'm here to look at your accounts to either make you more money or save you more money. I appreciate you've had many different managers, which is why I would like to get all your documents here. So I knew I could save their documents. I'd find out their young daughter was Emily or young Albert. How old is he? 3 years old. Okay, let me just log that so I remember that. And guess what I was doing the next week? Hi, Mr. Samuel, how are you? I was thinking about what you said. Is young Emily, is she going to be going to private schooling? What, 9 years old? Okay, have you made provisions for that? No, okay, well, we've just had this fantastic savings account at 7% and no one's doing that. And it's only 250 a month. End of the year, it's 3,000. In 10 years, by the time she's ready to go, that's 30,000. That's the first 3 years paid for. Jolly good. Please set one of them on. Can you meet me in the IOD club, Institution of Directors Club? Used to go there, play squash with these guys. Used to go Savile Row where Elton John used to work. You know, so I was really good at that 5 days a week. And guess what I did on Saturday, Sunday?
McDonald's.
I'd work. And guess what my spending money was? McDonald's. All while I was saving my 70 grand salary for my deposit. So the first people go, I'm not on a £70,000 salary. Okay, well, look at this. I was getting £1,300 as a cashier. What's that make in 10 months? 13 grand. All of that got banged into the savings. And guess what? I didn't know I was going to buy a property, but the guy next to me, Anish Taylor, goes, bro, I really need to get rid of my property, you know? It's causing me problems. And you know what? I've got a really good deal in Hertfordshire and the lady's giving me a big discount. I need to get rid of it. So how much you want for it? 180 grand. Nah, bro, not for me, bro. I ain't got 180 grand. I didn't know how this worked. He goes, bro, I can get your mortgage for you. I know you're working for Barclays. You know, your pay slips. I went, I ain't got that much savings. And then he looked at it and he went, I made him sweat September, October, November. He goes, I need to get rid of it. I said, how much is your loan? And he said, my loan is 100 grand. So how much did you need for you? He goes, I'm short 40 grand. I went, 100 grand loan. He needs 40 grand. So if I buy 140, he gets his part of the deal. So I went, I'll give you 140 for it. Nah, you're killing me, bruv. I need to buy furniture on this. I went, cool. If you want to do a deal, let me know. 2 weeks later, bruv. Not happy about this, but let's do this deal.
What year was that?
This was in 2010, I think.
So around 2010.
Yeah, and I bought it in Dagenham, East London. And today that property is actually worth 450,000, by the way.
Oh, well, yeah.
You know, and I've refinanced it twice. So it's infinity what I'm earning on that. You know,
yeah.
I put a little mortgage. I moved in there for 2 months and I realized this is bloody stupid. I'm paying £500 on a mortgage and all my expenses have gone up. And my parents go, what are you doing? Like, you know, you're only 20, 21. What do you need to move out for? We're still here for you. We're a family unit. And I was like, do you know what? I called the bank. I went, look, I don't want to live here. Can I rent this out? They go, well, yeah, you can get a permission to let.
Yeah.
I was like, all right. And go, send us a check for 250. So I sent them a check for 250. They said, at the renewal, we'll change this product for you. It's all right, cool. And at that stage, I went and put it on the market and I got £1,000 for it. So this is what a light bulb moment happened. I'm like, right, man's getting £100 Saturday, £100 Sunday. That's £200. That's £800 a month. I can survive on that. I'm getting £2,000-£3,000 from Barclays as a cashier, coordinator, personal banker. It eventually went to £4,000-£5,000. But that's my savings. And then I'm getting another pot. So my thing was, I'm going to open a Lloyds account. I'm going to open a Barclays account. I want a HSBC account because that's my property money. That's my McDonald money. And that's my Barclays money. Because I didn't think of opening separate accounts with the same bank. I was like, I need different cards. So then I'm going to know it's associated with thing. I don't know if that's my OCD something.
No, I did the same thing.
Yeah. So that's exactly what happened. And then it became, okay, I've got Barclays money. I'm still number one here, by the way. You know, so when you work in a place, you still give them your 100.
But only getting paid like 30 grand.
In the bank, once I started getting 2.5 grand, I was number one in sales. I used to get another £3,000 on top of that, 5.5 grand. Then 1,500 went for NI and 800 went out for, taxes and stuff.
You know that first house that you bought for 140 though?
Yes.
Here's my thinking. You were working 7 days a week for years at the bank, McDonald's, saving, 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 and you use that savings to buy a house. But if you're doing it again and you know what you know now, wouldn't it make more sense to say, I'm not doing McDonald's. I'm not working my ass off in a bank. I'm just going to find the property and then I'm just going to raise the finance. And because how much did you actually have to put down as a deposit on that house?
I think I put about £14,000.
So could you, about that, so all that saving, savings, yeah, probably took you a year to save that.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you have been better to just get a £14,000 loan?
Yeah, potentially. I wasn't educated. I was your simple boy down the road, East London, not educated.
Hard worker.
Yeah, that's it. And that's all I knew. So I didn't know what to do apart from, I don't know how to open a business. I don't know how to be an entrepreneur. I just know if I attach to this company and get what I need out of it, give them a bloody good service so they won't get rid
of
me.
That's right. Yeah.
And give them the top, because you've got other people out there that go in, be the last one in and the first one out. I don't know if you've seen this guy on TikTok.
It's stupid.
You know, and do the minimal you can. Listen, what you're doing is building bad habits there.
Because
you're going to transfer that over to your business. Be the best employer.
Just quit if you're going to do that. Just quit if you don't want to be there.
Exactly.
But your story is one of graft and struggle.
Big time. You have to tell you.
But does it have to be that way?
No, it doesn't. When you've got the knowledge and the know-how now, if I was mentoring myself, I'd be a millionaire a lot quicker than 27.
So would you do things different then?
I would do things differently. I'd go and get educated, first of all. You know, because if that's the door, the network and the education. Yeah. When you go and get educated, there's other like-minded people that know stuff that you don't know.
Now, that deal, if it was worth what did you say it was worth? 180?
It was 140 when I bought it.
No, but it was what was it worth? Because you got it below market value because the guy.
Yes.
So it was worth how much? About 180?
180, yeah.
This was worth 180. You got it for 140.
Yes.
That's a banging deal.
Yes.
And then you just rented it out.
Yeah.
Made a nice little bit of income from
that's it. Just give it a lick of paint.
Yeah.
And that's what I used to do on my evening and weekends. After McDonald's, after 8 to 4, and after 5, 6 o'clock, I used to go around to my properties to go and do work on them. And I used to get one of these builders, a handyman, who would just go, at the end of a whole month, would go, just give me £2,000 for all of the work I've done. I've had a new kitchen put in, a new partition, stud walls put in, a boiler system put in. I said, I'll run the pipes. Give me the drill bit. I'll put the holes in.
Do you still work really hard today?
I work hard in different areas. I'm trying to build different businesses. I try to stay productive all the time.
I think you've had it ingrained in you that you have to work hard, probably from a young age.
It's a way of like, I'd hit depression if I just sat in my room all day. I feel the most wasted space.
Yeah.
Even though I've got a tap full of money going through all different accounts, if I stayed at home, I'd feel like I'm a waste of space. I'm not good for nothing.
But there's a difference between doing nothing and then slaving away at McDonald's.
Yes.
I mean, now, how many hours a week do you think you work?
I think I work more because I love the game, you know, building like, you know, some of the things that you've done to get reels out, to get a YouTube build out. Like when I commit to something, you're getting a YouTube video out a week, you're getting it. And you're getting a nice thumbnail and a title and SEO scores and tags. If I told you you're going to get a new guest on Take a Seat podcast, you're getting that every week. I'm sending out DMs. Bro, would you please come on my podcast? You want £1,000? I'll find that budget for you. Cool. For your time. That's cool. You have to take so many hits. Even at this level, you should be able to say, yeah, you're a millionaire. You can use your brand. You can use your weight. You can't. You can't tell a next man to come on your podcast and he goes, what? You want me to come out? I'm a celebrity. I'm a singer. You want me to jump on your podcast just for the love? It's about the money. It's about the game. You know what I mean? So we face challenges. And how many people don't reply to you because they don't know who you are or what you are, or they don't want to give you time of day, and you send 20 emails out. Not one person will go, yeah, I'll give you a shot. You know, and life is that. Like, people think being a millionaire is the most beautiful thing. It's a status, like a celebrity, an actor, a singer. You're a millionaire. It's not that great. You're the most hated person out there. Why? Because you drive a nice flashy car, big Range Rover, rich bastard. That's what they'll call you. You're flashy. You've grown up around money. Is it daddy's money? That's all they'll ever say. But when you're working in McDonald's and you've got spots on your face and you're wearing a cap over a grill, they'll say, oh, I don't want to know you. You're not good enough. You don't even wear Fendi or Versace or Gucci. You're never liked anyway.
Mm.
And it's like, here, you're not rewarded for any hard work. You work so bloody hard to get somewhere in your life and give your family. And they go, oh, your kids go to private school? Posh little people. Oh, you think you're too good to be around the rest? Hang on, we're trying to make the system lighter. We're trying to make a classroom smaller. And guess what? I got bullied like hell. I got beaten up in the toilet. Got my nose broken, been stabbed. You know, so many things that have happened day to day. You say the wrong things. You, people say, don't wear your tie after swimming because you're about to, there's 30 people waiting outside to put you underneath these flats with a broken glass and you get pushed in the middle and you're getting all this anxiety. That's what anxiety is. And 30 people shouting like dogs and going, yeah, yeah, hit him. Go on, hit him. And somebody punches you and you see three of him. And then you're in a dogfight. And when you see a bit of blood and they hold you up like a champion, you're like, get the hell off me. You know, what you put me into that situation for? That's what it is really like. Do you know what I mean? And when you try to get out of that lifestyle and give your kids something better and try to give yourself a better lifestyle, all you ever do is hate it. So you're like, I've had two different lives. Mm. I've had it as that council estate person and the multimillionaire person. And guess what? People will still judge you no matter where you are.
Mm.
And when you're this guy and you're still trying to give back to the community, if you're providing it for free, you're not even appreciated. What does he want? Is it something in it for him? Yeah, life still isn't easy.
You know what's interesting as well? I've built my business off the back of finance. In fact, I've been using bridging loans for well over a decade. And I think everybody knows within the buy, refurbish, refinance space, which is what you do when you're buying properties, adding value to them, then refinancing it. Bridging loans are a fantastic tool. Yeah. Everyone knows bridging loans are a fantastic tool. And I built my business using bridging loans. Mm-hmm. And it's something that I advocate for my students, and it's a fantastic tool. However, it was only about 18 months ago when I decided to set up my own finance company,
nice.
Samuel Leeds Finance, which provides bridging loans. Mm. It's my own money. So I'm putting my money where my mouth is, backing my students' deals. And I continue to talk about bridging loans as a tool in my content, in my videos. The amount of people on TikTok that now hate on me for talking about bridging loans, because I have a bridging company that previously wouldn't have said a thing. Mm. So if I do a video and I say, right, here's how you get into property, here's how you can buy a property, recycle your money, use a bridging loan. And then they're like, oh, but you're just saying that because you run your own bridging loan company. It's like, no, I've been saying this and doing this for over a decade. Mm. I only started my bridging company 18 months ago. Mm. But now people are suddenly skeptical. Mm. It's interesting, isn't it?
And I don't think you're the type of person to lend somebody money with the educational background that you have. You're not going to make a silly decision. If you know that person ain't going to make money on that deal.
Yeah, of course.
And you want your money back at the end of the day, don't you?
Yeah, of course.
You know, so you're not going to make sure that deal goes bad. You want to say, look how good my bridging loan is.
Of course.
I want more customers too by doing a good service. Yeah. So it doesn't make sense.
And they pay me, but they're paying me from profits with the deal. But my point is, people are skeptical. People don't like the idea of you making money doing something. So if I'm talking about bridging loans, I'm saying bridging loans are a fantastic tool. Here's how you use them. But I don't have my own bridging company. People will say, "Oh, that's really good advice. Fantastic." But as soon as I set a bridging company up, they're like, "You're only suddenly." Yeah. It's like they throw their brains out because they can't stomach the idea that I'm actually making money. Same with training. If I'm doing a video and I'm saying, here's how to make money, here's how you can, oh, you've got a training business there, you're just trying to make money. It's like, yeah, I am trying to make money.
Wow.
Of course, every business I have a property development company, I have a hotel business, I have a buy-to-let company, I have, I've had letting agents, I have a construction company. Right now I've got Property Investors Mediation Service, I've got my bridging finance, Samuel Leeds Finance, I've got a training company. And guess what? Every single one of those companies, guess what I want it to do? Make money, because I'm a business person.
Yeah.
But people can't stomach the fact when they see someone actually making money, they can't stomach the fact. It's the same as the people that hate on property investors. And I've seen you get into debates and stuff, which we might get onto. but people are like, you're taking properties off of us.
Are we?
No, of course we're not.
Or are we fixing up places that are debunked and providing a good space for people to live in?
Of course.
You know, we're regenerating areas. I know somebody who's regenerating a museum in Birmingham right now, and it was just a debunked building. And now she's separated it to an Airbnb space to create a good experience, to bring employment to the area, to bring a good, you know, customers, to bring quality living and making the place flourish and get people to get their phones out and go, come and see this place. It brings in, you know, there's a whole ecosystem around this. And the most basic thing is a nice place to live. What good is a property that is all boarded up with graffiti all over it? Who wants to live there? What kind of experience are the kids next to it? What kind of people are going to be, you know, growing up around that? When we make nice neighborhoods, people just don't see that bit. And they just, do you know what? I think it's the, I'm sorry to say this, but the government's agenda. they make things really, really hard and throw us under the bus when they're the ones who's increasing all the taxes. So even like with NI, when NI contributions increase, you think, oh, that's nothing to do with property. Well, hang on. The person, you know, who's putting the NI up now, who's the employer going to pass the cost on to? He's going to make his products higher so you can sell them. So somebody's going to go in and go, well, the price has gone up.
Well, it's the same.
They have less money in their pocket.
Rents are going through the roof right now. Sadiq Khan is talking about trying to bring in rent control in London, right? And rents are going up generally about 10% or more every year and have been doing for the last few years. So everyone knows we're in a housing crisis. However, when they changed the tax rules and said that you can no longer claim your mortgage payment as tax deductible, of course rents are going to go up because the landlords are feeling the pinch because the government are taxing the heck out of them.
Yeah.
So how are they going to make sense of the deal anymore? They're going to have to put the rent up. Mm-hmm. And then when they put the rent up, everyone blames the landlord. But really, the government should be thinking a bit smarter about the repercussions of their decisions.
Mm-hmm. I think the worst Labour, the worst government coming into power is Labour.
I really do.
I mean, like, you know, just in Kent right now, it's just gone bankrupt. The council in Kent has just gone bankrupt.
Yeah, but that's been happening. Like, you know? Birmingham went bankrupt last year.
Yeah.
That was under Conservative. Most of the property changes that were abysmal, like Section 24 tax, like all the renters reform bills, all the stuff that happened under a Conservative party. Mm. So how can you say Labour's the worst?
I just generally don't think people have a good business brain. You know, if you've got someone like Rishi Sunak coming in, he runs a company. He's a billionaire. I want a person like that running the country. Yes, he's going to put certain things up temporarily to sort out the mess that we had in the early 2000s of what debt was given from Labour.
But look at all the crap, though, that was brought in during Rishi's time and David Cameron. I mean, we've had a Conservative government for over a decade. We've had some terrible stuff happen.
There's a big hole in the debt system. There's always been. The whole country's run on debt. Yeah, I get it. But I think, you know, the business decisions you had to make, look, we do need streets cleaned. We do need all of our council taxes paid, rubbish taken, things we do need to put up back in society. And as a business, where I'm watching what he's trying to do, it all made sense. But since Labour has come in again...
Keir Starmer's a businessman. He's a lawyer that had a law firm, doing very well, very successful businessman.
Yeah. I can't see it with all of you.
But
know,
that's the even, facts,
even,
though, bro.
Even the,
so you can't see even, it. That's the facts.
No, but he's got, you know, ambition of capping how much you can put in an ISA now. You know,
so?
You can stop putting as much money into a tax-free vehicle.
Yeah, but ISAs, I think ISAs, the whole ISAs are a sham anyway. I hate ISAs.
Look, it's another vehicle. As a businessman, you must know you have property, you have businesses, you have investments. You might have crypto. And by the way, at the time of filming right now, crypto is actually going for it right now.
Yeah, it is.
So that's, there's something should always be going up in your portfolio. And in my my ISA right now, if I've built...
Do you have an ISA?
Yes, I have a tax-free ISA. I was just put 20 bags a year from myself and 20 bags from my partner, you know, and I've built that to a very big level that eventually I'm just going to plug it into a dividend paying stock, something that's quite solid, do my research, plug it in there and just get a reoccurring tax-free amount. That's another strategy.
Did you ever sign up to the Help to Buy scheme?
No.
You don't like that one?
No.
But that's another one of these government helping schemes.
Well,
helping schemes, like, you know, like first time, lifetime ISA, all that nonsense. Like, in my opinion, I know you might be able to say, oh, it's helping people because you put money in and then the government will put 25% in. It's great. It just teaches people to think so small and pathetic.
Mm.
Like, you only can put $5,000 a year in and it's capped.
Yeah.
Straight away now, that's making people think small. Because, oh, okay, I can only put $5,000 a year in. So if I'm working, then next, $5,000 a year, fine, that's tiny. But then you have to use it to buy a house to live in, which in my opinion, generally speaking, is not smart.
Yeah.
I think before you start buying a house and getting a mortgage rope around your neck, where it becomes bad debt and an expense, much better off thinking big and buying actual assets. Mm-hmm. Like the whole system is created to keep people small-minded, in a job, 9 to 5, saving up for a rainy day, all that stuff. I hate all that.
I mean, yeah, you're absolutely right. but you need to come and take a step back and look at the bigger picture. Look at all these products they're providing for you and going, I'm putting a bet there, because diversification is key as well. Can't put your eggs in one basket. And all the time, something in my portfolio, something's going up and something's going down. And guess what? You don't make a loss when something's down and you sell it. If you sell it, that's when you're making a loss.
Right.
When it goes up, that's when you sell it, you know, or that's where you sort of average in. If you believe
outside
in it
of poverty, do you invest in anything else?
I do commodities. I do metals. Yeah. I do gold, silver.
Do you? I'm not about personally, and everyone's different, and reasonable minds can differ.
Yeah.
But like having a little lifestyle going on here, and then this over here, and then
what are my uranium stocks?
Yeah.
So if you research the charts, every 15 years it goes to a bull cycle. So I've just been placing little bets. I put $3,000 in this thing. It's now sitting at 21.
But then you've got to look at it.
27,000? No.
And you've got to think about it. And energy's going there. Energy's going here.
You don't. It's a metal. It's a store of wealth. It's the oldest money. When I was going to buy a piece of Samuel's land, it's like, hey, can I give you a bet of gold? And then the poor man said, can I have a bet of silver? How will that ever go away? The whole world,
no, it's good.
You know, the whole world's currency is on the dollar, because they sell oils, etc. What if that goes bust?
It will.
It's backed by nothing.
It will go bust.
It's fiat currency, right?
Mate, now you're preaching to the converted, man. Now you're preaching to the converted. I think it will go bust. I think it's going to crash.
Yeah.
Here's a question then.
Yes.
When money becomes worthless, which it will, when people's... I'm married to a Zimbabwean woman.
Yes.
And I don't know if you know anything about the Zimbabwean economy, but... you could have had millions in the bank, and in 2009 suddenly crashed, and then they scrapped the currency. Oof. So if you had 20 mil in the bank, it's suddenly worthless. My parents, or I say my wife's parents, but we're married now, so we're one. They bought a house in 1997 for 1.6 million Zimbabwean dollars. By the time I went to Zimbabwe, just over 10 years later, I got on a taxi, and he said, that's 1.6 million Zimbabwean dollars just to take me 10 minutes down the road.
Wow.
Inflation. Mate, that's hyperinflation.
Yeah.
And then the following year, they just scrapped the Zimbabwean dollars. Now, if you go to Zimbabwe with Zimbabwean dollars, they'll laugh at you.
So this is why things like Bitcoin, you know, people think, it's fraud, it's this, that, other.
Yeah.
A lot of people in Africa, when that internet switches on and they can get access to Bitcoin, they put their money straight into Bitcoin. It's locked now.
Yeah,
it moves a lot slower. Even when these currencies totally get debunked and worthless, this is why a lot of people are putting things in, because it's decentralized.
I must say, I do have money in cryptocurrencies. Yeah. I have money in Bitcoin. I do have some gold, not a lot, but I spend zero time thinking about it. For me, it's like you got fast pound and then you got slow pound.
Yes.
Fast pound is my business.
Yep.
Fast pound is my hotels. Yep. Fast pound is everything I'm actively building to create cash. Then I'm dumping it into slow pound over here.
Yeah.
95% of my wealth is in property, and 90% of my property is in the UK. So I'm not like super, super, because I also think invest in what you know.
Yes.
A lot of people that lose money are investors that lose money are investing in stuff that they don't know about. Mm. If you invest in something you don't know about, there's some off plan development overseas, and I don't know, but it sounds good. You got to know.
I have bought one place abroad, though.
Where'd you buy it?
Dubai.
Okay, good.
Yeah. By the way, you just sounded a bit like James Sinclair. You know him, right?
I know him, yeah.
Did you just say fast pound, slow pound.
Oh, yeah.
I saw a presentation this Saturday. I was like, I thought it was you up there for a second.
I've not spoke to old James for a long time now, but I know him very well.
He's a proper showman. Yeah. You used to be a magician?
Yeah, I did.
He was like a magician up there. Like, yeah. Do you know when he was before? I've never seen you at these £1 courses, but I've heard so many great things about them. But James Sinclair, the way he was just himself and just being himself, it was just like made everybody laugh, humor. I was like, sell me anything right now, I'll buy it.
That's good, man.
That's how I felt like around him.
That's good, man.
Yeah.
So, but that's the thing. Like, I think only invest in what you know.
Yes.
But anyway, going back to the future of money.
Yes.
So when money becomes worthless, what do you think is going to be the safest investment asset class there is? Do you think Bitcoin? Do you think real estate? Do you think business? Do you think the stock market? Do you invest in the stock market?
I'm not a trader. I don't have time for that.
Not trader. Yeah. But do you don't?
No.
How come?
Because I don't know how to look at these company accounts. And
so you agree with me then?
What's profit?
I could say to you though.
Yeah.
But I'm diversified, bro. A bit here, a bit there.
That bit I don't have time for. I ain't got that much capacity. Right. That's so going to be looking at charts, employees, market cap.
Bro, you should invest, in the stock market.
Oh, yeah.
100%.
No. It's not for me. It's not for me. I'm making too much money in other places. It's overflowing, bro. It's overflowing. Do you know what I mean?
Bro,
you know?
I'll just tell you this, though. The stock market is the most passive investment there is. Way more passive than property, way more passive than anything the stock market
is. I'm also from that generation that it can just, Black Friday can come and you can just lose it in a second.
Yeah, but you know? If you invest, if you're picking stocks, yeah. But if you're investing in the S&P 500.
So this is what I do. Look.
Most of my
money comes in from property. I then put stuff in ISAs, which are tax-free. Because I think you never know where you can move into that.
Your pension?
No, I haven't done a
Why?
SIP yet.
Why?
Because most of my thing, like, I've just bought a pub with three flats.
Yeah, you should have done
it. It was like 1.2 million. I got it for 900. I've just got a 300 discount on that with no stamp duty extra that you got to pay. And I know it's in an area where it's going to be regenerated. It's going to be 1.5. That's 500, 600. I'd rather invest into that than put stuff where I can't use it.
No, but
that's
bro,
not locking it
but bro,
away.
Bro. If you invest into a pension, if it's like a SAS pension, you can use that to invest in commercial property. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you can put money from your business into a pension and then use that pension pot to invest in commercial property tax free.
Yeah. I'm getting to that bit now.
You should look at that.
I'm just about.
That's way better than all your ISA nonsense that you're doing.
Shall I tell you what my best investment is?
Go on.
60 grand a year on private schooling.
That's true.
Because that's my next gen.
Yeah.
And my son Jaden, he's 10 years old. He's GCSE level in piano already.
I'm just pulling my kids out of private school.
Oh, are you?
Yeah.
How comes?
Because I don't like it. Okay. I think it sucks. I think that school, even private school, is oppressive, and I think that the teachers are brainwashed.
Okay.
And I think that the system is rigged to keep people in this whole work hard, have a job at McDonald's, have a job in Barclays, save up money, put it in an ISA. And I'm against all that nonsense. I think it sucks.
Multi-millionaire 38. Here you go, baby. Micro.
No, but I'm not. I don't think you have to do that. I don't think, and I think your resilience and your work ethic would kill most people.
Oh yeah,
and
it,
I think
it
that,
doesn't exist anymore.
No, it doesn't.
I have new employees, and you go, "What happened here? Oh, you didn't tell me that."
But as it happens, you got into property. Yeah. But most people, bro, the poorest people on the planet are the hardest workers. So this whole mentality of work really hard and have an ISA. And save up, and I'm not about that. I think it makes way more sense to just find good property deals, let someone else work hard, use their money.
I'll be honest with you, being in the position I am right now, I don't know how to even get investors, how to put that solution together.
Really?
You know, people go, "Oh, I've got 60 grand, Chuck, at you, 70 grand. I'm like, "Oh, what am I going to do with your money? Why do I want to get involved in your deal? I'd rather do something
but
myself."
I don't
get the whole
but
thing.
But now, though, you don't have to, because you've worked so hard that you've got to the point where you don't need to be using other people's money right now, because you can just snowball your own money. Mm. But what I'm talking about is starting out, I wouldn't recommend people go uni, go McDonald's, go Barclays, work for a decade, saving up the first two. Because do you know another thing as well? I'll tell you this, really interesting. I'm not being funny, but when you started, the times are different.
Very different.
Right, let me finish my point, because this is important, Sean. You started you got your first job in early 2000s. Was it like 2006?
Well, McDonald's was 2004.
2004, yeah. Even better, right? That was a long time ago, bro. That was two decades ago.
Oh, shit.
Yeah?
I'm old.
Not mean to make you sound old or nothing. You're older than I am as well. You've got a few years. I'm only 33, right? But I got my first house when I was 17. So maybe, how old were you when you got your first
21.
House? So we were, how old are you now?
37.
Mate, we both bought our house. I bought my first house in 2009, March 24th, 2009. So it was probably a similar.
Yeah, mine was 18th of February because it was Dad's birthday.
2000 and?
I think.
10, you said earlier.
Yeah,
10. So I'll beat you to it. Bang, bang. Yeah. Right. But here's the thing, right?
It's not a competition, yo.
No, it's not. No, it's not a competition. It's not. It's lessons. Yes. It's lessons. And it's differing minds, but it's important.
You're way bigger than me. You're way bigger. You've got a mastermind.
No, but I'm learning from you still, though, bro. I'm learning from everybody, and you've achieved a huge amount.
I've done things like at a snail pace and got to 10 mil. you're probably worth probably 10 times more than
bro,
me.
Bro.
And I've seen all the stuff. And the thing that you don't talk about is all the charity that you do.
No.
You know, all the hospitals you're building, all the schools you're building. You don't talk about none of that. You just hear it from other people. Do you know Samuel's doing this? And you don't see you talking about that on TikTok, which is why I respect you a lot.
I was mutually, man. As soon as I saw that first video, I was like, remember when you said earlier as well, you said people don't care that you're a millionaire. I care. When I saw your story and I saw first thing I thought this dude's a hustler. This dude's worked well. He's built up a portfolio. I respect that. And that's why I messaged you. I was like, bro, we need to meet up. Come around my house. That was 2 years ago now. But back to what I was saying, this is really important. In 2008, which is when we kind of were on the scene, getting into the 2009, 2010, the average salary was around about 22, 23 grand, right? For a young, normal person, it's only gone up a small amount. Yeah, house prices have doubled or tripled. So for the average person that's working their ass off in McDonald's and stuff now, to save, the average house is 300,000. That's the average in the UK. London is more like maybe 450, 500, but in the UK, it's 300,000. A deposit is going to be, for a buy-to-let, is going to be 75 grand. Stamp duty's gone up. You're going to need best part of 100 grand. To save 100 grand at McDonald's and Barclays is going to take, it took you maybe 10 years, is going to take 30 years. So by the time the average hardworking grafting employee has saved enough to buy an average small normal house, they're probably, and the average person doesn't get their job until they're 23, 24.
Yep.
So you're going to be in your 50s. And then on top of that, yields are down. Interest rates are higher.
Yep.
You finally buy that house after grafting for 20 years, and now your rent is going to be 1,200, but your mortgage is going to be 900.
Yep.
And now what? Now I've got to do it again. So I think it's important. Your story is super, super inspirational, bro.
Yes.
And the way you've got to, where you've got to now, like, we have to learn from it and draw lessons. But at the same time, I'm not about working two jobs, saving up, going uni. I just think it's a waste of time. Most people go to school for 20 years to go to university. The average age of someone starting their first job for a woman is 24, for a man is 23 before they get their first job. And then they get a job to do what? To save up and get money and put it in an ISA. I think we can skip that whole school part. That's why I pulled my kids all out of school. Skip that school part. Skip that uni part. Skip that job part. Get straight to the money part. That's what I'm about.
Wow. Well, you got to remember also times are different. So I wasn't in a technological era.
It's true.
If I had a computer and I could Google something, use AI, you know, you can make a website in three minutes now.
Yeah.
Just use a bit of AI. You can make slides, a PowerPoint presentation.
Mm.
I could have scheduled this whole, like, I use ChatGPT all the time. Act like you're a social media manager of the last 35 years, not like you know everything in the industry. I am this person. Tell me what I should do next and give me a strategy. Boom, there you go. There's days of work. Like, I wish I had that sort of stuff. I was calling my best mate Sam and going, we're going to meet at 6 o'clock at the clock tower. I'm bloody going over there and he's not there. Waited 5 minutes, coming back home going, hi, is that Sam's mum? Where's Sam? Oh, okay, cool. I'll go back then. Boom. You know, that's what era we was from. It was totally different. Now the average entrepreneur is like 11 years old.
Yeah.
The guy who made my Discord channel was 21 and he's an expert. He's done it for Simon Squibb and he's done it for like Mark Tilbury, all them sort of guys. And I went, how did you know this at 21? Because I started at 15. It's this little chubby kid with the little headphones and a little mic thing. He goes, I can sort that out for you, Sean. Oh, dude, I feel like you're my best friend now.
Do you think the marketplace discriminates against people because of their race or their gender or religion?
Absolutely.
Stuff like that?
Absolutely.
Do you think so? That's
interesting. I don't know. I haven't been employed by a company for the last 10 years properly officially.
I'm more talking about in business rather than in the employee.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're an employee, you have so many rights and everything's so careful.
Yeah.
In business, it's free for all. If you come to me as a business person, try to sell me a deal, race, I can just go, nah,
no.
Just because of your... Whatever. But I definitely think
these harder. You are judged. Yeah, I definitely, if I say, you know, hi, it's Sean, you know, and talk that way, and he goes, yeah, great. If I say it's Nishon, you know, my full name, like not shortened, Nishon is like, right, send me this, send me that, send me this. And it's just like, oh, even a car dealership. I did that the other day. I was like, I said my name. And he goes, tell me your, then he goes, is it for you? I said, no, it's for my partner. When I said her name and it was Asian, it was just like, yeah, we'll give you a call back in half now. We've just got a few people here.
Really?
We'll check and we'll see. And it's like,
that's wow. Interesting.
Oh, like, it's racism isn't said. It's felt.
Yeah,
it's felt.
So you think that if you were a white English person, maybe your net worth would be a bit higher?
But it could potentially be true. I've been in Currys, walking in a queue right in front of me, and it's like, all right, Dave, yeah, we'll do that for you. This, that, other. All right, Steve, cool. Yeah, we'll do that for you. You turn up and it's just like, give me a minute.
Really?
And it's just like,
wow.
What is this about? I don't know if that's just Essex.
Maybe it's you, bro. Maybe it's you.
Could be. And I've seen other people in the queues being spoken to. I'm like, why is he spoken to him like that? We're all human. Yeah. We're all, we're all this. Our colour of our blood is all the same.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
So it does exist. And that's for sure. Absolutely.
In the property business, you think still?
It always exists. It always, especially with planning.
Really?
A lot of my friends are billionaires. You know, I got very good, but they don't want to be on socials and stuff
like that.
Mate,
I tell you what hurts with planning, being known. Yeah, it hurts.
Yeah.
100%. Like, I have to be a bit careful. I'll speak to you off camera. But like, when I'm working on different sites and developments, I can't be talking about it on social media. I can't be, because then the council workers will then punish you for it.
Wow. Okay.
I didn't know that. Yeah, that's something for you to be mindful of.
Yeah. But a lot of these... planning, he goes, I said, how comes it's taken you 10 years to build these 34 apartments, to convert this pub and add it all up and stuff? And he's like, because my name's not Dave.
Really?
Dave down the road's got E's done. Me, I've had to go through every lawyer in the bloody country to bloody dot the I's and cross the T's to get this through.
That's
people in the industry telling me.
He's
telling me, oh, when I get these bank managers in, I call this bank manager, that bank manager, this bank manager, that bank manager, to make sure they know all about each other, that you're all fighting for my business. And, always have to try and make it competitive to go, you're not my only option here, so make sure you treat me right as well.
What advice would you give, though, to someone if they're starting out, that's maybe feeling that pinch, because everyone gets discriminated against. Yeah. It might be that they're from a council estate. Then didn't go uni.
Yes, of course.
They're a woman.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
What would you say to someone? Because, of course, being like super paranoid, even if it's true, being a victim and what you focus on expands.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, sometimes ignoring something and pretending it doesn't exist when it does is disingenuous. So what are you saying?
My best advice is keep your emotions out of this.
Yeah.
Don't be emotional. People will treat you differently. People could discriminate you against your weight, fat shame you.
Right.
This is a new thing. Your color, your age. Ageism is a thing.
Yeah.
You're too young to know this. You're too old. You can't compete in this. People will always put their opinions on you. It's up to you whether you let it digest with you or not. Have a shield, look at the mirror, and that's your only competition. Yeah, and you just think every day you wake up and go, how do I do this? How do I be a better person? How do I get that door open? You have to bang down 10 different doors. How many times have I been in Barclays and I rang somebody and go, hi, we've got a new savings? Boop. Cool. What does that mean? I stop? No, that opinion didn't matter. It just wasn't right for that person.
Yeah.
If somebody talks to you a certain way, he just doesn't understand. He's had his thoughts and belief downloaded from other people in his environment, in his circle. So when people say something silly in front of me or talk to me, I don't say, I have to swear at you, shout at you. I ain't got time for that.
Yeah.
I've got Zen, I've got peas.
It just means that there's a problem with them.
You do not understand. It's okay. I know we smile. You're probably better than me, bro. Let me leave. That's the best way.
Mm.
It's like even the Bible tells you, you get slapped, turn the other cheek. Mm. It's the best thing.
Are you religious?
I'm born Sikh.
Yeah.
My mum is a Christian, very strong Christian. I'm born Sikh. Do I go to the temple every day? No. Do I go every Sunday? No. Probably go on a wedding and probably a funeral and probably on a New Year's Day. But I give thanks. Like, my religion is one of the most unbiased religion. It's one of the most unselfish religions. It says that if you need to pray, you go into a church, a mosque, synagogue, or a temple if it's there. Every time I'd go into a temple, you just donate some flour, some milk. And guess what? Sometimes you even see all people of all different color coming to eat in the free kitchen. It's a very giving religion.
Mm.
I don't go to the temple every day. I don't pray five times a day like some religions. I don't, wear certain symbols. But do you know what? I live a life of righteousness. No one can call me a liar. You can look at my bank accounts in a minute and see how many mortgages come out. That's why I speak from confidence. That's a very peaceful.
Yeah, and I asked you before the interview. Is there anything you don't want to talk about? Anything? And you're like, no, man, anything. It's calm.
That's People get so fixated about money, and money actually means nothing, because at the end of the day, you're not going to take a big shopping bag full of money to the grave and take it out the other side. You're just going to be the richest man in the graveyard. You know what I mean? So you've got to be thinking, this is a byproduct of my hard work. Everything I've done is just through my mindset.
So what's the purpose? What's the purpose of you striving hard to make money? Why do you want to make money? If you say it's meaningless, what's the purpose of
it? I don't follow money. Money follows me. I just create stuff to help people. I do property because it's the only thing I know how to do. People go to work because it's the only thing they know how to do. They work that job and they want to climb the ranks. Same here. I want to do that property. The HMO property, the semi-commercial, I bought a pup. Do you know how many people in my family go, you bought a pup, Sean? Do you know how good it was? My mum was holding the keg pint sort of thing, and I took a picture of that. I don't know how long I got my mum for, but I know she touched this place that I've just got. I want to inspire people. Like, I come from nothing, and I've done this. I used to pick my ex-girlfriend up around the corner from this building thinking, where am I? And now I'm buying places like this. It's like, how did I do that?
Yeah.
You know, just for your mind, your mindset, your body.
I think as human beings, we're built to build things. We're wired and we're created to progress and to grow and to conquer. Yep. So growing a portfolio, having a legacy. I mean, going back to what a minute ago about money, the future of money. So let's say money crashes.
Yeah.
What do you think the chances are that the government are going to try and start taking people's properties from them?
I think that would be very difficult.
I think so.
You know, from the very start of time, land registry, any documents, you've got to find the landowner of this. I can't even read some of the English that it says on these documents. Yeah. And for them to go through the Houses of Parliament to put new sort of restrictions on. And who's the biggest landlord, actually? It's bloody...
Church of England.
Yeah. See how much property they own, and they don't pay none of that capital gains tax or no taxes at all. What makes them so good that they're exempt from all of this? I'm sorry, I don't understand that. Why can't they join the queue like all of us? Why is that a big divide? Isn't that some sort of discrimination in some sort of way that you have to be a royal, a title, or a sir, or a king? And there is that hierarchy.
There is, but there even is with the difference between enterprises and companies versus private landlords. If you're a company, you get a lot of tax write-offs that private landlord that's buying things in their personal name wouldn't have access to at all.
Yeah, that's true. And that's a good lesson there as well. Get the bloody right accountant. Because up until 2017, I was buying a shitload of properties in my personal name.
Me too.
Yeah.
Right from 2009 to 2017.
Okay, same.
It was all personal. But it's not worth switching.
Yeah.
Because of you're having to pay stamp duty again. You're having to pay. I mean, there are some things you can do.
There is something you can do.
But then you've got to split test it and go, is it actually worth it? So you think property is a safe asset class?
I think it's a store of wealth. You know, you've got fast pound and then you've got a store of wealth. Well, property is not where it used to be unless you're very creative and very colourful with it. You know, you've got to find places which are not Article 4. You've got to look at stuff that can be developed, that you can get on a bridging loan, that you know down the road someone has got planning permission to do extensions to turn it into, you know, a six bedroom with a couple of kitchenettes and a couple of bathrooms. And then you can refinance it at a new commercial valuation over £75 per room.
Right.
£75,000 a room, etc. And then you can literally take your money back and copy it's and paste a business. That again.
Yeah. It's a business. Yeah. If you go into property just thinking, I'm just going to buy a house and rent it out and sit on it and wait for it to go up in value, you might make money, but it's going to be very slow. Whereas if you think, actually, how can I, like you were talking about, how can I add value to the house? Money follows value.
No, definitely. You can't buy the best house on the street. You got to buy the worst one.
Yeah.
You got to add something that you can refurbish. You can add something that you can
add
something.
I think it's about having vision.
Different strategies.
But I'm saying, what's my vision for this? I'm going to buy it. And what am I going to do with it? How am I going to make it better? And then once you've got a vision, then you look at the viability. Mm-hmm. Is it viable? Now I put it through my calculator. Yeah. But most people lack vision. Mm. You know, like you. I know you. I bet when you're driving, you're just driving past houses and you're just slowing down, taking pictures. Like, that's me.
I've seen somebody in the network who's bought a museum which is listed, and she's got a bunch of planning, and she knows the council for the last 10 years. I want to find out what she's doing, because that's interesting to me. That's like listed building, museum, there's a bit of heritage there. Like,
yeah.
That's just interesting. But at a byproduct, you'll get all of these other things agreed around it that you will make money at the same time.
Yeah.
But it's not just about money, you know. You've got to be content as well. You know, you've got to know your limit. You know, I think that's important. I've already bought a holiday home abroad. And I know,
whereabouts?
You know, I bought in Dubai.
Oh, yeah, you mentioned.
I bought it in a place called Town Square.
Nice. So, how much did that cost you?
So basically, it cost me 250. 250 grand, and it was 5 payments of 25 grand. So you only pay half of it. So I paid one in January, one in August, one recently. Yeah, so 3 payments, 75. I've got 2 more payments. They've already started the groundworks. All my money goes into a government escrow account, and then the government send out the surveyor to make sure they can release the money, because that government does not want a bad reputation. The king runs his country like a business, and already the guy's going, your property's gone up to 310. Do you want to sell it? Nah, mate, I'm not selling that. Why? Because everyone's discovered the brand new airport that they're spending 124 billion on has just opened right next to it. So already it's going to become a hot Airbnb space that people are going to want to sort of let out. And it's lovely. 2-bedroom, 2-bathroom, built by Emaar, one of the biggest developers. Is Damac and Emaar in Dubai. And I'm like, cool, I'll have a bit of that. And then guess what? By the time it's up and built, it'll be like, yeah, I'll have a 50% mortgage, 125, or I'll pay it off cash and then get my residency over there and get 80% loan to value. Might just buy another one out there, you know? And guess what? You can also buy a property with crypto out there. So those of you thinking, what I'm going to do after this Bitcoin bull run, take it to Dubai, baby. They take that stuff. They go, put it on the table. We'll take 10% and you can have property. Here's the keys, 24 hours.
See, I think there's a chance that the government will very likely try and ban cryptocurrencies.
Well, just an article came out yesterday that the Fed in America is going to be buying billions in Bitcoin.
Yeah, of course.
That was an article that was coming out because they see it as a store of wealth.
They'll be setting their own cryptocurrency up. That's I think what's going to happen.
Richie Sunak was talking about Bitcoin, wasn't he?
Yeah, CBDCs, and then it'll be a case of. I mean, they're already we're already becoming a cashless society.
Yeah,
the high streets, all the banks are closing down. I think what they're going to do is I think that they're going to set up a digital central bank, and then they're going to crash money to zero, and then that will become the new.
It makes sense. It does make sense. Do you know that there was thousands of criminal records lost through normal computer system because it was just centralized? It wasn't decentralized and put in through all of these thousands of computers like cryptocurrencies are. Mm-hmm. The cryptocurrency isn't just currency.
No, the blockchain is revolutionary. Exactly. It is.
Yeah.
So I think that's the future. But you've got to get prepared, man. And the thing is, though, the way that they're going to crash money is actually going to massively increase property values. Because right now, if you've got a couple hundred grand and you use that to buy a property, if that money starts crashing... Yeah.
So when's that going to happen, do you think? When do you think it already starts?
I think it already is happening. I mean, ever since they took money off the gold standard, every year we look at inflation between 5 and 10%. In 2022, inflation was 11.1%. So money is shrinking. They are crashing money year on year.
And wages are not going up.
No. They're crashing money year on year. The government aren't paying down their debts. They're getting into more debt year on year. How are they going to pay down their debts? Their debts by printing more money. I think money is absolutely done. I think fiat currency is done.
Do you know what I think is worse than that? The new generations are becoming like robots now as well. You know, you don't get an entrepreneur like yourself anymore. You don't get that. It's people's like, hello, how are you? Because why? They've just been scrolling all day long.
Yeah.
And so they don't have that ability. And it's like, oh,
yeah.
How do I do the marketing strategy? ChatGPT. There you go. There's your work. Yeah. That's what it is.
But I hate all that. I hate that. I'll never ask ChatGPT questions like that.
We're the last generation who knew that generation and this one. So we know how to use it, not let that use us.
But that's why I'm taking my kids out of school. Because I think that school is brainwashing people to be plugged into the system.
So you're homeschooling them?
Yeah.
Okay.
I've already built my own school.
Wow. Okay. So they're studying here or in Zimbabwe?
Not here.
Okay.
Well, not in this room. Just down the road.
Okay. That's really, really
Hired
good.
Hired 2 full-time teachers.
Wow.
And I've pulled them all out. Wow. Starting next month.
Okay. That sounds interesting.
Yeah.
Sounds interesting.
But private school is definitely better than state school.
Well, it's a smaller classroom, 19 to 20 people.
It's way better.
And the history teacher is an architect. The science teacher is a scientist and stuff.
I think if you're going to send your kids to private school or just send them to school in general, it's just important that you raise them and you're teaching them.
I think it's really important.
Or just take them out.
Yeah.
Because I think that the schools are.
And this is the bet. My kids, I guarantee you, if you come to my house and you went, Jaden, can I borrow 100 quid? He'll be like, how much am I getting? Am I getting 20%, which is £20? Like, you know, he'll ask me.
Yeah,
that,
yeah, because you teach him about money.
They know.
But you also
money.
Got to teach him about lots of other stuff. You've got to teach your kids about money. You've got to teach them about mindset, development.
I think the only way you can do that is take your kid out with you.
Yeah.
You know, when you're going to do business deals, I go, you hold the keys.
Yeah.
You hold the contract. Do not give the keys until we get the money.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, Dad, got it. Yeah. Got it. Like, let them be part of the deal. Yeah, I have to do that. Yeah. And people think, oh, you're cruel. He's only 9. He's only 11. You're cruel. No, you're cruel for not teaching your kid that after 16, he's a legal age to walk out and do what the hell he wants.
Exactly.
I want to give him as many skills as possible and download everything. And the best experience is experience.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's so many people reading books and going, textbook, this deal is going to make you X amount. This is how much you expense it. When does it ever go like that, Samuel? Mm. It never goes like by the book. That's the person who normally loses you the most amount of money. The one who's bloody, do you know what? Just start.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Just get out there and start, man.
Start in business. Learn as you go. Yeah. But Sean, pleasure, my friend. Bro, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me on. I really, really enjoyed this, man. Thank you for the opportunity.